And also for a country like Portugal, for instance, because, as you know, in last years and this year also, we are making a huge effort in order to have a more consolidated public finances. We are struggling in order to reduce public deficits, but in order to reduce deficit in a fair way, we need to fight against tax evasion and tax avoidance. For us, it's a key issue. For us, it's a quite important topic, because when we want to reduce expenditure, when we want to collect more taxes, in order to do it fairly, we need to fight, and we need to give that message to our citizens. We need to fight against tax evasion and tax avoidance. Secondly, I need to say also that it's impossible to do it alone or in a standalone solution, country by country, member state by member state. This fight today is a common fight and should be one of our priorities and should be, in my opinion, one of the most important issues in our party, in our common party, in the European Parliament, and also in PES, in the Party of the European Socialists. If we have a common topic, I suppose, is this one. We can disagree sometimes about other European policies, but we cannot be... But this topic, in my opinion, is clearly a topic where we have all of we have the same approach. Fight against tax evasion and tax avoidance. In the Portuguese Parliament, we are working on that. The Portuguese government is working on that. I know also, and we have here Ana Gomes, for instance, and before also Elisa Ferreira, the European Parliament is working also in this topic. The European Commission, they are, in the last year or last 2 years, they have produced more legislation and more regulation about it. But the work is not done. We need to move forward. The way is not even in the middle. So some issues that for us are important and are quite important. Some topics that I will introduce in order to have a discussion. I don't have a final conclusion. We will have a common final conclusion, but it's only to introduce the discussion. And I will introduce four different topics in a quite fast way. Firstly, tax havens. How to fight against tax havens. What can we do about it? I know that issue is also on BEPS action plan, developed by OECD. European Union, the European Commission, they are working together and they are trying to implement some practices that are included on that action plan. But one of our proposals is to have a single tax event concept, a single concept with a common list that can be managed by an European entity, and then fight and have a control about the flows, money flows, from those tax havens and into those tax havens. It's not a quite easy discussion. I have tried to have that discussion with different specialists. Of course, we are fighting against huge interests. It's not quite easy discussion, but we need to address an answer and a fast answer to this question. What the concept, what it is, to define the concept is to define the boundaries of that concept, what is in and what is out that concept, to have a common list. And in that common list, with that common list, we need to give to European Commissions and to European institutions a role in order to control and to define rules for all. Those rules cannot be different to Portugal and to Spain and to Sweden and whatever. We need to have that common list, and we are working on that. Second issue that for us is quite important, and some steps were given in this field. Automatic information exchange, the famous DAC that our European Commission is always introducing, DAC 1, 2, 3, and now 4. But it's not enough. And sometimes we have more rules in order to control money flows between member states, and we are not controlling in a proper way money flows and flows of money within our member states, and in Portugal we are giving some steps in that way. I will introduce our steps given, well, we have a proposal probably in our next budget. That proposal can be approved, but I will talk about that later. We are in the good way, but we need to exchange more information. More information in order to capture those flows that are always trying not to pay taxes, and they should pay taxes. Thirdly, well, we need to put a huge spotlight on tax rules and on tax agreements between member states and companies. The Apple case, it was only a case, a single case, but we have a lot of other cases. I will not talk about LuxLeaks, because probably Ana Gomes wants to talk about that, but of course we have a lot of agreements between member states and companies, multinational companies, usually based on the concept that we need to have a tax and a fiscal competition between member states, but that fiscal and tax competition between member states is a way to transfer money to capital and is not a way to transfer money to workers, to welfare state, to healthcare and education. We are promoting more capital accumulation, and we are competing between each other. Competing with tax rules, tax agreements, and this is not the way. We need to solve that problem. I know the fiscal topic is a quite difficult topic in the European Union. When the Council In the different council meetings, fiscal issues are always difficult, because we know that some member states, they have policies in order to have more fiscal and tax advantages. However, this, for a socialist and a social democratic, this is not the way to compete. We need to compete based on value added, the respect for workers, social and environmental plans. So we need to have a different perspective about competition between in the internal market and between companies in the internal market. If we are always competing in the tax base and sometimes in different situations, and I have many, many different cases in the Portuguese economy, because before I was member of the board of the Portuguese Trade and Promotion Organization, and many times Portugal have lost and earned at the same time. Some companies, they have invest in Portugal, but the tax issue was always a key issue. And they are always trying to have better conditions, better fiscal conditions. And they say, well, Spain is giving me more money, more tax reductions. France, Sweden, whatever. The country is not important. But tax competition is transferring money to capital, and it's not transferring money to people, to workers, and to, in order to have a sustainable welfare state. And fourthly, the BEPS action plan. The BEPS action plan promoted by OECD is a good issue, is a good plan. And G20, they have also have promoted some discussions and some initiatives on this field. However, we need to look to BEPS. In Portugal, we are doing different things in different dimensions, but we need finally to have a multilateral agreement on this. If we have a multilateral agreement on this, we can fight against tax evasion and tax avoidance. And about this issue, I suppose, could be important to discuss in each part of the implementation of this action plan our member states are in this moment. Portugal. Last comment. Portugal. Well, since November 2015, we have a new government, and based on BEPS and based on the action plan, BEPS action plan, and some European Commission directives and regulation, we are trying to have, firstly, a fast introduction of those directives in the Portuguese Portuguese fiscal law, and even in August, some topics about information exchange were transferred to the Portuguese law. Secondly, we have finally signed an agreement, and we are implementing that agreement with the United States in order to have exchange information with the United States, in order to have to control those flows with the United States. And more, in this Parliament, and for me it's the last topic, but it's an important topic. In our Parliament, we are developing a green card in order to, and that green card is going to be launched in our network probably in November of this year. We're trying to promote a green card in order to give a new impulse, in order to give a new impulse on this task, in order to avoid tax evasion and tax avoidance, and to fight against this tax evasion and tax avoidance. A huge number of different measures are proposed. We are discussing this green card with the right wing of our parliament. It's not a quite easy discussion, but we are doing that discussion, and probably in November, other parliaments other chambers in our European Union will receive a proposal of the Portuguese Parliament in order to have a new step to fight against tax evasion and tax avoidance. So, in order to introduce the meeting, I suppose it was different topics, our perspective. And, well, Mr. Paulo, the discussion can begin.
Thank you, Eurico. I think it was a good start. Actually, I think we can broaden a little bit the topic, tax evasion, tax avoidance, and something that I don't have a better word, but I don't like tax harmonization because it raises lots of...
Yes.
So now I have an expression, but then you can build on this about an alternative. What progress towards a tax minimum playing field or minimum tax playing field? We should have some expression with this idea, and perhaps better than this one. So we can touch these topics. What can we do about tax havens? How to improve exchange information, what to do with tax competition. So the floor is open for those who want to make a contribution on this topic. Karine?
Maybe I'll just start because I think that on this subject, we have a European agreement. That's a very important one. That is on BEPS, the success is there. As if I do not make any mistake, on the 15 pillars of BEPS, 11 are already implemented in a European directive. And the most important one, that is the directive that starts in 2017 on the automatic exchange of information between countries, is adopted. And in France, it is already written in the law. So I don't know where you are with the translation of the directive on automatic exchange of information, but in France we have it in our laws, and I believe that there is no recommendation, important recommendation of BEPS, that is not already in the European law, and so very rapidly in the national laws. But maybe I make a mistake. Maybe it's a good morning to take that. On our side in France, BEPS is in the law, and I think that's, well, let's not forget that 3 years ago nobody would have bet that OECD could implement in all the countries, especially in Europe, by the way, that. So just say first that it's possible. BEPS is a first example where we can, as you say very nicely, Paulo, maybe not coordinate, but anyway, that we can do the same thing in the same goal with the same tools. So that's the first point. But maybe I'm wrong, and maybe other colleagues will tell us that it's not so easy to have BEPS everywhere, even with the European directive. That's the first point. The second point is, let's put aside BEPS. Now let's discuss what the problem inside European problematic, which is not, of course, the problematic of information, or which is mainly the problematic of the capital in Europe. That is how we have the possibility to. We have no frontier for capital inside Europe, and that's the reason why we have a little issue between us, which is not, by the way, tax evasion. So what can we do between us? The European Commission has built a very strong answer with Mrs. Vestager, which is the Apple case. 13 billion euros of tax condemnation due to a competition approach. I must say I'm pretty satisfied with this decision of the European Commission, because it makes a sense to say we have no frontier, we have no border for capital inside Europe, but we have no border because we want free competition, and there is no free competition if there is a way to attack competition through tax rules. That's a very liberal approach, that's true, but it's a consistent approach, which is also quite new. I mean, there is a second pillar of the logic. The question that we have to ask ourselves is, do we go on this track? That is, okay, let's imagine that we can make a new equilibrium between free competition and harsh tax competition between us, with only this competition approach. I believe so. I really believe so. That is, I believe that if we say, okay, let's go there, let the competition direction in the European Commission do the job that the economic commission doesn't want to do, we could do something. But the main problem for me is the following one, and I just put it on the table. Are we sure that all the countries in Europe will will be okay with this new approach of competition in Europe. We know that Ireland, for instance, doesn't want the money from Apple. Is there other countries which are not ready to accept the fiscal money from some companies? Because it's a very different approach of all other countries in the world. The other country in the world, they want the money from the tax evasion. In Europe, we don't want the money from the tax evasion in some countries. So it's not the same world. We are not discussing the same question. So maybe we could go forward on this question, just asking and explaining that fiscal money has to be taken by the countries. That's you see, it's a new political approach. This, we cannot stand that Ireland say to Apple and the European Commission, no, we don't want the fiscal money, the money from fiscal tax, from, sorry, profit tax. We could maybe, the next step for us would be, we need to have countries fighting to get tax profits. Because it is the only point where I could imagine that Mrs. Vestager could not win a political debate. That's my contribution. Thank you.
Thank you, Karine. Gianpaolo.
Yeah. I think that whatever the attitude of the various countries is on single issues, there is an awareness overall that this is a major problem that has to be tackled. I think it is viewed by the public opinion as a real scandal that companies can play around between Ireland, London, we'll see about London. Can I name the country? The Netherlands and Luxembourg in order to minimize the tax. And to the extent that the rules remains as they are, with extraordinary patent boxes in some country, with extraordinary low corporate taxes in others, etc., you can't make a point against the companies themselves. I mean, it's their right to given free movement of capital across member countries to do their best in order to reduce their tax. But I think this is a scandal, and given the crisis, the difficulties of the welfare states that we have, all the things that you have said in the introduction, I think we have to act fast. We have to be careful not to start a financial war with the United States, because in between there is this issue. This morning, the Deutsche Bank has been fined for $13 billion, but the U.S. authorities for the subprime issue or scandal or a crisis. It looks very much, I have seen comments saying that this is the retaliation of the U.S. For the same fine being given to Apple. To a large extent, we try to say this is a problem that concerns mainly the digital economy, but as you know, and as the OECD has repeatedly said, everything is digital at this point. So there is this attempt to say that if you invent things in a whole variant, which all economists know, is the chief economist of Google. We have had a meeting with him recently in the Italian Parliament, and he says, be careful, you Europeans. He's a very thoughtful person. Because if you really mean that profits should be taxed where they are produced, virtually all of the profits of the digital economy belong to the United States. Then it's a matter of American policy, whether we let them in some Caribbean island until they are repatriated, which is allowed in the United States, maybe 50 years from now, and then they will pay taxes. That's our business. But essentially, it falls within. And the typical example of things that create tensions with the United States is a diverted profit tax imposed by the United Kingdom, whereby if bites, not people, but bites go around London or the United Kingdom territory, then that is considered as being a stable establishment according to fiscal law, even if there is no stable establishment. And then those bites are being taxed somehow. And the United States are claiming that those things belong either to Ireland or to the United States. So let's tackle the issue. Let's be careful and not... Of course, there are things that are wrong in the U.S. laws, or which are inconsistent. We have to know that. I mean, they not only pretend to tax things which are produced profits according to the location of production in the United States, but also they pretend to tax profits worldwide made by American companies, which is a principle. In principle, it's something which has been done in order to prevent American companies from to evade taxes going somewhere else. But at the same time, it makes it very difficult for us to figure out what we can tax, given that they are also taxed by U.S. authorities. So this is, I think, what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Gianpaolo. Timo?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning. I think Gianpaolo's warnings need to be taken account indeed, but in the big picture, I think fight against tax evasion is a big winner for Social Democrats. This, as has been said earlier, is one issue that we broadly agree upon. For I think two reasons. When you think what BEPS means, well, it's fight against tax base erosion. And we want to fund the welfare state. We want to fund social services. I think that's a given. So there is a very strong ethical base on our fight against tax evasion, and I think that's shared by the vast majority of the populations. And secondly, another aspect is that we want to ensure the functioning of a fair market economy, to be sure that there is a level playing field between all actors. So it's both to ensure the funding of social services, plus to ensure, for instance, small and medium-sized enterprises' status against multinational tax evaders. So I think we have both the ethical argument plus the competition argument behind us. And secondly, it's also a good argument for Europe. For once, there is something that has undoubtedly produced swift progress. As Karin said, that nobody could have imagined just 3 years ago that there would be such huge progress, that the whole argument, the whole political debate would go this direction. So we could say, well, Europe does work. Europe does defend its citizens and its tax base. So that is also, I think, a remedy for pessimism, Euroscepticism, and post-Brexit blues. Speaking of Finland, I think it's a good case in point, because our right-wing government was totally indifferent against tax evasion, against our old campaign against black economy, as also eroding tax base. All that changed when the Panama Papers came out. Suddenly, they found that they are on the wrong side of the argument. And what even better was that we had a consistent record of fighting tax evasion, being interested in these issues. Our former finance minister, Jutta Urpilainen, gathered a European meeting in Helsinki of finance ministers to deal with tax evasion issues back in 2013. So we do have a checkered record on many issues. We do have something we don't want to remember that fondly, and we can always be said that we did some wrong things in the past. But this particular area for the Finnish Social Democrats is something that we have a very good record to defend, and we can prove that we've been there. I'm sure this is true for other social democratic parties in Europe as well. So I think politically this is something that we stand to gain, and nothing but gain on this one.
Thank you. Valérie.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for the presentation. So far, we see some discrepancy between us regarding the way we would like to approach the position of the United States. This morning, there was an article in the press explaining that Deutsche Bank might have to pay 14 billions USD to the US because of the subprime story, etc. So far, we need to answer to this, because we are in the situation when we are spectator, we are looking at what the US are doing. So they take one bank after each bank to explain, okay, now we would like to. And what is Europe doing? We are accepting that US companies do not pay any tax. Apple is the first time where we see that there is one European reaction to this. But this is the first time. And because we do not all over agree, Ireland might have a different point of view. I'm not so sure if it will go to the end regarding this story. So there is a big discrepancy between what the US are doing and what we are trying to do. This is except at the exception for Apple. This is the single case we have today. Personally, I do not fully agree with Giancarlo regarding the position of the US. I think this is the right time to react, to say, okay, we put everything on the table, but Europe is Europe and not each country. Europe is the biggest economic power in the world, so we need to have our word to say. And not looking without doing nothing at what is happening. This is the right time to do it. Karine explained before that more than two-thirds of the BEPS recommendations are adopted by the United Union. We need to go further to have them implemented in national law. This is the second step. But we need to have also a political voice to that. And I agree with what Tim was saying. Timo, but Tim, he said Tim yesterday. Timo was saying yesterday, right now. We need to have a strong economic reaction and a strong also social. What are we going? We are the power of welfare states, and we need to use what this money for that. So I think this is a two legs battle that we need to tackle and to raise. But we need to react to say, okay, US, maybe they have a good reason to ask 14 billion to Deutsche Bank. But to my point of view, the subprime crisis has started in the US. So we can't not stay, we cannot not react to this. We need, as European, I said as European, not as French, as German, as Portuguese, as Italian, as European, we need to have a political reaction to this. And this could be through all this tax evasion story. But we need to say this has a goal in Europe with the welfare states and with a strong social goal.
Thank you, Valérie. Anna Gomsch.
You gave all of you all very relevant, crucial arguments why this ought to be a central fight for the socialist family, the socialist and social democrat family in Europe this day. But I think we need to understand more. This is something that has totally perverted the EU, totally perverted us. This explains how we have been contaminated by all these neoliberal policies in many other fields. Because if we yielded on this crucial question, we have been cheating our citizens, burdening our citizens at the same time, giving sweetheart deals to big corporations, allowing all sorts of organized crime launder money through the tax havens, creating tax havens inside the EU, inside our countries. I mean, this is total perversion. So we need to actually realize this. It's much more crucial than just something that is like the moment to do it because we started doing it and because we are short of money for our states. It's a central question of the contract we have with citizens. And we need to also understand the background. I mean, the U.S., let's not be naive, the U.S. were those ones, and the big capital in the U.S., but then, of course, spread all over, who started creating tax havens. Panama was created as a tax haven at the beginning in 1903 to be a tax haven for the capitals of the U.S., who didn't want to pay tax in the U.S., and, of course, they spread. And that's why we have, you know, the Isle of Man, Jersey, Madeira, and many of our own countries, Gibraltar, but many of our own member states actually functioning as tax havens for the others. This is the case of the Netherlands towards Portugal. You know that 3 or 4 years ago, and probably the situation now is even worse, out of 20 of the stock-listed companies in Portugal, only one had its headquarters in Portugal. The 16 had it in the Netherlands, and then two in Switzerland and one in the Cayman Islands or something like that. But this really shows, and that of course it was not only because there was less tax to pay in the Netherlands, and of course the excuse is, tax certainty. But it's also because, of course, Portuguese companies didn't need to declare the proceeds of all the profit they made in other countries, in third countries. It was an organized way to actually evade paying tax in third countries, namely in developing countries, for Portuguese companies, but as well for any others. So I think you need to understand this. In the European Parliament, when we wanted to create the inquiry committee on the LuxLeaks, and you know, before the LuxLeaks, we had the Swiss leaks, Lagarde list, we had the Liechtenstein leaks, and we had and so we knew, many of us knew, those who worked in the financial sector obviously knew what was going on. But when the LuxLeaks came out, indeed, there was such a scandal at the time when, for instance, our taxpayers were burdened with brutal austerity and brutal taxes because that it had to be done something. But it was a hell of a fight, including in our family, I tell you. Maria João knows it was a hell of a fight in our own political family to create the inquiry committee on the tax, on the LuxLeaks. And that committee has done fantastic work, I think. Two reports, where two of the co-rapporteurs were ours, Elisa Ferreira in the first report, second report, Jeppe Kofod from the Denmark. Great work. Great interaction with the Commission. I think in this respect, Pierre Moscovici really made a difference in the interaction with us. But what, and now of course Verstager is making a huge difference. I can agree that indeed, I mean, Verstager has done the most important thing that I think can help the EU reconnect with citizens. Which, because of course it's not just about Apple, and it's not just about Ireland. It's about all of us. Verstager told us in January in the tax committee that she had asked our member states to provide her with all the information regarding all the sweetheart deals, well, the so-called tax rulings that they had passed with companies, and that she had received more than 1,000 from all member states, some more than others, but all of them. And of these 1,000, they were already going through them, but 600 very much looked like illegal state aid. So it's not just about Apple and Ireland, it's about all of us. And I wonder what our governments are indeed already doing, even without expecting the Commission to impose on them to act. We need to understand as well that, of course, and I think this is, it's, we had just called your attention to the debate we had with Verstager 2 days ago in the Parliament, in the European Parliament, exactly on the Apple case. And of course, we had several colleagues from Ireland, but not only from Ireland, from all parties, contesting and arguing that the democratic, there had been a democratic decision in the Irish Parliament to fight the Commission, and so on and so on. And of course the argument is 6,000 jobs, but how many other jobs would have been created if the Irish government would have that money for public investment? How many people would have been properly treated in hospitals or people going to schools? Not to mention, of course, the tremendous unfairness that it is to SMEs. I mean, Moscovici told us that SMEs pay on average more 30% taxes than multinationals. Now, and of course Moscovici also told us that what the Commission is proposing, and the Commission of course is already making a lot of proposals besides the Verstager move, a crucial question will be, of course, big fight, CBCR, country by country reporting, the CCCTB, the assessment of the common tax base for taxation. The crucial question of beneficial ownership, publishing the beneficial ownership, this has a lot to do with incorporation, which is another totally corrupted system, lax system on purpose. And it has a lot to do with fighting money laundering, because, I mean, and fighting organized crime. Our governments are not serious when they promise to deliver on security, including fighting terrorism, to our citizens, and to continue to allow the tax havens to launder the money that is the proceeds of all sorts of organized crime. Because that's what the tax havens are there for. That's what the secrecy is there for. So fighting the tax havens is actually preventing secrecy, demanding, making compulsory, it's the only way to fight tax haven. You don't abolish tax haven by decree. You take out the secrecy. And that's why these measures are so important. Moscovici also said that, of course, this is much more than BEPS. And BEPS, as it was already pointed out, is already having trouble, obviously, not just among member states. They always, I mean, you know very well, our member states hide in the tax matters under the rule of unanimity to actually in practice boycott, even when politically they say yes because the citizens would not understand otherwise, then they keep boycotting, hiding one after each other under the unanimity rule. The same happens in the context of BEPS. And in the United, we went to the United States with the tax committee, and we found allies, but we know very well that we have some of the worst enemies. Allies are people like Carl Levin, or the Levins, the Levins brothers, one is still in Congress, the other left. But it was actually Carl Levin. I mean, all these stories about what's going on, it's actually started by the U.S. Congress with the investigation of Carl Levin a couple of years ago, 2010, when he uncovered. And he actually, it was Carl Levin and who actually uncovered that Apple was not paying tax to the U.S. and was going to Ireland not to pay the 35% tax that was they were due to pay in the U.S. So we have allies and we have opposers. We have to actually organize ourselves with the allies. We have allies. We, for instance, we brought to them the idea, something which is ridiculous. I am one of the few voices in the European Parliament for a year saying that we cannot think of negotiating a TTIP with the U.S. I don't think it's going anywhere soon, but it was ridiculous to be negotiating a TTIP where the I was for investment and not indeed having some kind of mandatory BEPS. Basic, it's what, for instance, Piketty has been obviously saying. But that our own guys don't even put it in the agenda, it's absolutely ridiculous. It shows that the whole nature of BEPS is actually quite perverted, of TTIP is quite, the way it was being negotiated was quite perverse. Anyhow, we have allies for that in the U.S. It's our duty to actually interact with the U.S. to make this question a crucial question. I just would like to say that we have now, of course, with the Panama Papers, we are passing another stage, because the LuxLeaks was focusing on corporate tax. But with the Panama Papers, we are actually focusing on individuals evading tax and actually using tax havens for a sort of hiding the proceeds of corruption and so on and so on. In the field of taxation, a crucial question, I just have to say this. There are new ways that our governments are inventing, to actually continue in the same dirty ways, to make deals, sweetheart deals. For instance, what is the so-called patent boxes that several of, it's another way to actually give sweet deals to companies. We can't allow that, and we are in the European Parliament already coping with it. And I would just end saying that, of course, this is you have said it, it's distorting the internal market, it's perverting, it's a race into the bottom among European states. The same is the so-called investors' programs or golden visa programs. It's the same kind of race into where they are. Some of our member states are directly selling citizenship, like Cyprus and Malta. Some of us are doing it by installments. It's the case of Portugal. But I would just end by saying, yes, this has to translate into our national policies. And I would just say that we socialists put in the agenda the FTT, the financial transactions tax. We managed to sell it even to Merkel. There are 11 member states who theoretically embarked on the FTT. The FTT would be absolutely crucial to put some order in this, to control, to get data, to prevent tax evasion, but nothing is being done. Despite the fact that we crafted the FTT, Merkel bought it, and now it's been stumbling. This is very telling that indeed the kind of difficulties we have, and they are also inside our own family.
Thank you, Anna. Human.
Thank you. I think it's very good that, in fact, we repeat the same discussion we had in Paris, but the topic is so important that it It's not a bad idea to talk about this from time to time. By the way, the same topic was discussed at OECD in Paris a few months ago. We had the opportunity to exchange ideas. About Bulgaria, we implemented all the directives of the European Union. It was met very well by the Parliament. It works. We see some positive results with the increase of the budget revenues in 2016. We signed a bilateral agreement, of course, with other members of the EU, but let me tell you that the Bulgarian rightist government made a terrible mistake. They played like a servant with the US government, and we were pressed, and the rightist government gave a pressure on their majority in the parliament, and it's a great shame, but Bulgaria accepted one-way agreement with the United States. Now, one-way.
There is no bilateral?
No bilateral. So, Yeah, listen to this. It's a problem of the European Union already, because the Americans are playing double games. With the big guys in the European Union, they have bilateral agreements. With Bulgaria, countries like Bulgaria and Romania, have to pay millions of euros to serve the Americans, organizing, systemizing data, sending the data to the United States. Well, it creates some employment, a little bit, on expense of the Bulgarian budget. Delivering information to the United States. So is it not a shame? And where is the voice of Europe? So we spoke about this at the commissions. I and my colleagues spoke at the parliament a few times. No result. They're pushing the buttons and confirming the agreement. So it's a shame. Which means that in many cases the United States is playing the game one by one instead of negotiating and having the same principles with all the members of the European Union. So it's a great problem. Secondly, if you remember, I support 100% my colleague, and in Paris I also spoke about these tax havens. Listen, we have to answer this simple question. Why we, the leftists, in the European Parliament and at the national parliament, do not work hard enough to close the tax havens? Because the first logical question of our voters, people supporting the socialist idea, the social democrats, are asking a very simple question. You don't need to be a professor in economics. First of all, why the tax haven exists? Who created the tax haven? The politicians, because it's a matter of international legislation. Is it not clear? And why the international legislators do not close the tax havens? The liberals, they have a, strange, not idiotic idea that the tax havens stimulate the investment. So they want to convince me that, let's say, if I have 1 million euros and I invest in Europe, the effect will be less than if I invest first in the Caymans and then transfer the money from Caymans to the Europe. You must be out of your mind to believe this. So there is no single argument, human being, there is no single economic, psychological or other argument to support the idea of the tax havens. So that is why, who preserves the tax havens? The politicians. And obviously from all the directions. Some politicians from the leftist parties in the European Parliament, they don't care about this. Is it true? They simply don't care. They do not protect the interests of the regular workers. Because who is using the tax havens? The middle class? The teachers? The poor professors? The students? Who is using? The fat cats? And what we, the leftists, are doing about this? Nothing. Blah, blah. Discussions year after year, and we are trying to solve a minor problems with BEPS. Here we will improve 1%, there we will improve 2%. Trillions of dollars are circulating and they are making fun with us, because freely they have 100 of channels for money laundering. Also, the most arrogant thing is Luxembourg and the Netherlands in this case, not the countries, but, the political elite. They don't care. They continue to be a black box, so the French are angry on this. So what? They don't care, they continue. Germany, they say we have problems with the Netherlands, and also Austria plays game with Germany because, as you know, smaller countries next to the big countries, if they have tax differentiation, they gain some additional revenues for their budget. So where is the equality here? And it's absolutely unfair game. So BEPS is okay. I'm not saying that we are not supposed to continue to implement BEPS. But the main problem are the tax havens. And what they use the tax havens for? Tax evasion, money laundering, Also the politicians, some countries are using the tax havens to channel money, is it not clear? To the Middle East and other regions, organizing different interesting events. So they organize the events with the trillions of dollars circulating the offshore zones in the world. We pay the price in Europe. Because some countries created the problems in the Middle East. Now they are leaving the Middle East, but we have to pay for this. Is that right? So they don't want to pay the taxes, even $30 billion, and we have to pay billions of euros to solve the problem they created. Are we clever enough? I don't think so. Thank you.
Thank you, Roman. So the last, before I give the word to Eurico to finish, if you want to say some words, Marijo, I'll just, since we are more or less on time of the schedule, just to be, you know, accurate and to the point. Thank you, Marijo.
Well, good morning, everybody. It will be extremely brief because it was very telling, this tour de table, and we have almost the full picture. Let me just underline two pieces in the puzzle. First is the behavior of the banking system. Because one of the problems we have is that tax evasion and tax avoidance has become one of the most respectable, between brackets, services provided by very credible and respectable banking system across the world. So the problem also lies with the way we are regulating the banking system. So far, we have accepted that banking system is organizing, providing a very special service, which is how can we reduce our tax burden. So we need to tackle the heart of the problem, because a very professionalized industry about the tax avoidance is there. And so banking system is one of the key actors which needs to be reframed in order to tackle tax avoidance and tax evasion. And that's why politicians sometimes are under political pressure. They are under political pressure of the banking system also, which has very strong bargaining power, because of other reasons. So this is the network we are in. Second point, and most of you on the line, and Timo particularly, and others, a social democratic battle about this. Well, let me just inform that we need to set a connection between fighting tax evasion and sustaining welfare systems. We need to set this clear connection to get large support by European citizens. So I'd like just to inform you that in the European Parliament we are now starting with a big battle on the European pillar of social rights. By coincidence, I will be the rapporteur of this issue. And I just tabled my report saying the best way to sustain welfare systems is exactly tackling tax evasion and tax avoidance. So we need to say clearly, because this is no longer a problem of just bargaining between labor and capital. This is for social democrats of the 20th century. We are social democrats of the 21st century. So we need to go to other sources of added value, and most of them, they are inside the financial system and inside the channels of tax avoidance.
Thank you. And now for final remarks on common grounds, because we are just approaching your time.
Well, thank you. As fast as I can. And, well, all the comments and all of you have introduced the importance of this topic, but also how we share the idea that we need to have a common policy about this topic, on this topic, tax evasion and tax avoidance. One issue that is important for me politically is that for us as socialists and social democrats, for us this topic is an important topic to reconnect our parties with citizens. When we look to different member states and when we look to the political scenario, many times we are seeing socialists and social democrats, they are losing votes, and they are losing members in the parliament and the national parliaments. But I think, as just said, Maria João Rodrigues, and also before, I suppose it was Timo, this topic can be a good topic, and Ruman also, can be a good topic to have a common approach and to reconnect with people and to have more votes in order to have in order to introduce our policies and our vision in our societies. Secondly, Karin, about BEPS and the implementation of BEPS, I suppose, yes, we can agree, and we agree on this. BEPS, the action plan, the 15 points, is quite aligned, and the European Commission and European institutions, they are quite aligned with BEPS action plan. We are moving forward, introducing new European regulation. Of course, between member states, the situation of translation of this regulation is not the same. As I said, Portugal, we are doing a huge effort in order to translate everything as fast as we can with our new socialist government. But, of course, the situation is not the same. But, and before my last point, but, of course, it's easier to talk about this issue in general than in detail. In detail, we have a lot of constraints between the socialists and EPP and liberals, but of course, even as said before, Ana Gomes, inside among us, inside our political family. So we need to discuss better this issue in details, and I suppose we need to do more. To do more, not talking only about the general principles, we need to talk about specific measures that we can introduce in common. For instance, before I was talking about, I've mentioned a list of tax havens. I know European Commission is giving that step forward, but we need to have that step forward and then to control and then to take measures in order to fight, as Ruman said, against those who use tax havens. And those steps need to be taken and are not taken at all in this moment. We need to discuss those details in order to be more effective. Must be more than blah, blah, blah. We need to go and to move forward. Finally, tax havens. Tax havens. Of course, it was capital who has created tax havens. They need to be fought in this case. However, we need to do it in a common way, because right now the main argument for those who don't want to do anything is, alone we cannot do anything. If I close my tax haven, that tax haven of that member state in US is working, so I lose money and they are earning money. That's why we need a common approach as fast as we can. Tax havens must be under the spotlight, and we need to act against them, and our priority should be to have measures, detailed measures, in order to fight against tax havens. And I suppose our next step, we need to monitor BEPS implementation, of course. But as said, Ruman, I fully agree with you. We need to move forward. The fight against tax havens must be our major priority in the next years and next month. So, in order to conclude fastly, I will finish my conclusion.
Thank you, Eric. So, thank you very much for all. It was a very fruitful discussion, and let's see if we can bring some conclusions for the resolution that will come out of this gathering. I just want to inform you the before I go to the break, which I suggest that we try to be here around 11:05, because so there was some slight changes. So as I told you, we have to finish the next session at 11:55, because some of us have to go to the plenary session to vote between at 12. So this means that we have now the session with the break, then after the break the session, which has to finish at 5 to 12. Then you have some free time while we are in the plenary. And then we meet at 1 o'clock, and I suggest that Ana Filipa, tells you where it is. We meet at 1 o'clock for lunch. For those who can stay, if some cannot stay, I appreciate that they tell me in the coffee break, because we should say goodbye. So lunch at 1, between 1 and 2 o'clock. At 2 o'clock we come back here for several things. Well, there is lunch and the family photo, of course. If someone has to leave, we could do the family photo perhaps now in the coffee break. After lunch, so we decided not to make futurology about the new financial crisis. It's an interesting topic, but we decided to suppress this in order to make several things. First, Alban is going to show us the site that is going to be made for this inter-parliamentary conferences, and then we should discuss our main conclusions of the meeting and agree on them so that we can have a paper out of the out of this meeting. So this is the schedule of the what's going on afterwards. Thank you, and now enjoy a coffee, and I will ask you that, well, 5 to 11, that we could be all here. Does anyone, I think Igor has to take the plane. Igor. So does anyone has to leave? So 2 o'clock. Okay. So I don't know if the photograph is around, but I think we should take the family photo now at the coffee break. But perhaps he's not around. Well, in fact, well, we'll try to arrange this to have the family photo at the break now. And Tiger, I don't know if the photograph. O fotógrafo. O fotógrafo. Filipa, está aí ou não? Está a chegar? Sim. Ok.
Ao meio-dia.
Já avisamos.
Eu faço uma coisa aqui muito breve, que é para dar tempo.
Sim, sim, sim.
Ideia
sim. Eles falarem. Ok. Eurico, João Paulo, where are the others? Let me just ask for those who are here. As I told you before, we have to leave, we Portuguese members of Parliament, at least, of National Parliament, we have to leave at 5 to 12. So you have this free time between 12 and 1 o'clock. Igor suggested that he was interested in discussing TTIP. I asked Valérie, she would agree, but I think I put into consideration whether you would like to profit some of this time to discuss TTIP because it's a hot topic in Latvia now. Taimo, would you be interested in using a bit of this time or... yeah. Okay. So half an hour. So I suggest that after we leave, Valérie will take the chair here. She was just nominated. You carry on. So just half an hour, Valérie, 20 minutes, half an hour, you exchange views, and then the Scandinavian, which is another subgroup within the European Union, for those who don't know it yet, will meet, and then we go for lunch. We will start, Igor.
Excuse me to interrupt you, Pedro. Maybe it is worth, like Maria Jo Rodriguez says, her own opinion, just judgment concerning the TTIP and the attitude of the SND group in the parliament concerning the TTIP.
Maybe okay, not
now, but within some
okay.
5 minutes.
I keep the suggestion. I think, Valérie, you heard. Perhaps Valérie didn't hear the suggestion, but Valérie. Okay. Igor just made a suggestion, but that in this half an hour, perhaps if Maria João Rodrigues agrees, Maria João can make a brief introduction and then... But maximum, Valérie, maximum half an hour, because our colleagues from Scandinavia want to talk a little bit among each other, so they have half an hour free. And others who are not Scandinavian, they can have a visit to the Parliament, because at that time, Ana Filipa has organized a small half an hour visit to the Parliament, and then we meet at lunchtime. Now... Very quickly, we are going to make the family photo, and then we start the session. Very quickly.
You did? All right. You got a photo? So great.
Okay. So let's start this session on which budget for security and the refugees crisis, which is a hot topic at European level. I have with me Isabel Santos, who is also a member of the Socialist Party and a member of the European Organization for Cooperation and Security in Europe. Isabel, the floor is yours. Thank you very much for coming.
Okay. Good morning. I would like to warmly welcome you to Portugal and to our Parliament. It's a great pleasure to be here with you and to talk with you in my very bad English, but I think I will make me understand. Today, we will discuss which budget for security and refugees crisis. This is one of main topics in discussion in OSCEPA, in OSCE Parliamentarian Assembly, and I was very active in the last years around this topic. This is, of course, two issues, security and refugee crisis, two topics that are challenging us as progressive parties members and as politicians, as international organizations. International organizations are now facing a crisis. I think we can say that we are not able till now to avoid conflicts. We are not efficient till now to resolve conflicts. We have a lot of frozen or almost frozen conflicts, and we are not able till now to resolve these refugees crises. The refugees crisis is not a motive of insecurity, is a consequence of insecurity. And as progressive partisans, we must be very clear in our speech about this topic. Of course, Europe has a very important role to play dealing with this problem. But we are not finding solutions. Our countries are trying to find individual solutions more than global solutions. And we are failing on this. We are failing. We are not finding the way till now. I will try to be moderated in my speech, but I'm very critical disagreement between EU and Turkey. I'm very critical of this agreement. I think this agreement is a shame for all of us. It's an agreement against our values. And it's an agreement that it's not good for Europe and it's not good for Turkey. I was in Turkey in the beginning of 2015, and I saw at that moment what it was, the conditions of hosting these people and the reaction of the Turkish people to the presence and hosting these refugees, and I could be there after and see what is the reaction now, at that time with 1.5 million and now with 3 million persons inside the country. This is not good for anyone, and this is not creating conditions for integration, for development, and for security. I'm not very favorable to this nexus or this link, security and refugees. Refugees are not a threat, they are threatened people. And we must be very clear about this. And they are fleeing from what? They are fleeing from those who are trying to create, also in Europe, insecurity. Those who are producing terrorism, those who are radicals, those who are persecuting them, those who are generating wars. And our combat must be against, of course, and it is against that forces. And our combat, it must be provide conditions of safe lives and save the lives of these people. At this moment, we have around the world 40 armed conflicts producing an average of 170,000 deaths per year. And what is our option? Our option is clear. It's save lives. Of course, as progressives, we have a strong political combat on this, with far-right forces that are feeding the speech of insecurity, that are feeding the speech against the presence of these refugees, against hosting refugees, as if they were a threat for us. It's not easy. This has political costs. And of course, I'm not an expert of budget, and I'm very curious to hear you talking in budget related to this topic. But we must do this combat, and of course, budget will be one of the topics in this debate with the far-right forces. That is very clear. Far-right loves discuss budget when we are discussing human rights, and loves rise the flag of insecurity when we are talking about refugees. So, of course, we cannot avoid talk about security and control of borders, and it's very important also for us speak clearly about this and give to our citizens the grants of security and make them feel secure, and provide them to all the grants, the guarantees that we are controlling who is coming and who is entering in our countries. But this is not the same of build walls. It's very different. One thing is control borders and protect people. Another thing is build walls. And this is something that we must combat with all our strength. So, what budget for security facing the challenges that we are facing now, challenging of combat terrorism, challenging of control borders, the challenge of conflicts and avoid conflicts and create conditions of development around our region, avoiding more refugees for one side, and for another side, the answer short-term answer, that is the answer to save lives in the sea, save lives in the routes to Europe, and the answer of long-term, that is the integration in the labor market, the integration in health system, to grant health system, grant school, grant education for those who are trying to have a normal life, a new normal life in our countries. This is, I think, the topic that is being proposed to us to discuss. I'm not a specialist in budget, and I'm very curious how we discuss budget to provide answers to these two topics. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Isabel, for your introduction. Your English is not... you underestimate your English, so to create the expectation low, and then it's good, it's a good strategy, it was very nice. I can, before I register, and you can make some sign if you want to speak, I will just say that the topic was already somehow touched during this conference. I think it was Stefan who mentioned that in Belgium they wanted to increase because of terrorist attacks and mainly I think because of terrorist attacks they want to change and increase expenditure, and they said first idea it has an impact on their budget, and secondly was you Stefan, and first it has an impact the expenditure for against terrorism, and they wanted to increase it, and it was not easy with the Commission and to consider that this expenditure will not count for deaths and so on. So this was a little slightly touched in this conference, but since most of our colleagues are from the budget committees and finance committees, I think the question can be put at two levels. The first level is at national parliaments and national budgets. What is the room of maneuver that you have or you don't have in terms of increasing expenditure either for security or for refugees? As Isabel said, they are two different things and two different problems. And at the European level, in the European budget. So they are two different topics related. I have now just... Anna, I don't know if someone, and then Ruman. Okay, and then Maria João. So I ask you the more or less the European Parliament schedule of 3 minutes, please.
I don't think.
Let's say five. Now, let's see how many questions. Yeah. So because we at least have to leave at 5 to 12. How many people want to talk so that I can? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so 3, 4 minutes. Anna. Oh.
I don't think that the problem is budget. It's lack of political will. There is no budget because there is no lack of because there is lack of political will. Because indeed the crisis is not as of refugee, as we call it, but is actually of values, European values. This is a European crisis. Where we are, where is our solidarity? When our governments in the Council, 1 year and a half ago, decided to relocate 160 people from those refugees and migrants who were arriving in Italy and Greece, and of these 160 thousand, now, more than 1 year later, only 3,000 have been relocated. The process is very slow. It reflects a lot of political problems. And of course, in the meantime, we have had the Visegrad countries ganging together under the direction of Austria to bomb the Schengen system and to disrupt the whole thing. Of course, this all started with the walls that Orban started building, but But we are also building a wall in Calais in France, apparently, and I've been in Calais last July, and I'm sorry to say this won't make any difference. Because the question is this one. We will keep, and there is a link, I mean, we might, for political correctness, try to separate the security angle from the refugee and the moral issues and the humanitarian question. But, of course, we're talking about migrants and refugees, and towards refugees we have legal obligations, besides the moral ones. But this is a case that really demonstrates that we need Europe more than ever. You can only sort out the problem if we work in a European fashion. And that's exactly what has been failing. The current presidency, the Slovak presidency, was the first to go against the council decision of the relocation, to actually go to court against that council decision. It's tremendous. I mean, that is the current presidency. And the current president of the council, Mr. Tusk, put out 2 days ago a letter supposedly to be preparing Bratislava. You don't find the word refugees there. There is no refugees. People are in denial. And, of course, the angle of security is there because, of course, when our governments don't care, for instance, of the situation of the... We have now thousands of refugees undergoing horrendous human rights violations in European countries. In Greece, for instance, all these people that were, for instance, when Idomeni was dismantled and fragmented into thousands of little Idomenis. I mean, these people, if they are not, and I don't think they are not, but they can turn very radical against us because of the horrendous human rights violations they are enduring. For instance, the unaccompanied minors. 1 year ago, Europol was saying that 10,000 unaccompanied minors had disappeared. Now, only Germany has more than 9,000 of those unaccompanied minors that nobody knows. They are prey for all sorts of criminal networks, predators, including terrorists, of course. So there is a connection indeed, and I don't think that our governments are delivering, both in the humanitarian field or in the security field. And of course, we are continue to give business, big business, to the human traffickers, whom we know are clearly linked with all sorts of other criminals, because we deny the crucial question, which is actually open, safe and legal ways for people who want to ask for asylum or ask for work, actually have a safe and legal way to put their requests. In this way, we, and of course I fully agree with Isabel, the Turkey-EU deal, which is not an agreement, because it's not, a shame. It's a shame. I feel ashamed when Timmermans comes to us and tells us this is working. It is not working. I mean, it's because of this agreement that now the flows are obviously coming via Libya as they were, but now increasing via Egypt. And Europol just put out a map actually showing how the flows now don't go through the Aegean, but go actually towards the south of Italy, to Taranto and so on, putting the lives of people at risk. This is a tremendous European failure. This is, if there is something that justifies the people that say that we are at an existential crisis, this is it.
Thank you, Anna. Roman?
Thank you, Paolo. My country is in a very special position. We are at the border with Turkey, as you know, and the situation is quite different for Portugal, good for you, and countries like Bulgaria and Greece.
Roman, the microphone better.
There is no representative of Greece at the moment, I think, but okay. So, to make the story short. First of all, the tragedy is the following. Take a look at the news. The Secretary of State of the United States and the Secretary of State of Russia are negotiating about the future of Syria and the Middle East. And where is Ms. Mogherini? She's not there. Which means what? That we're out of the game. End of the story. So, which is the role of the European Union? We are payers. We spend money. So the big cats are developing the problems. I spoke about this before, in the Middle East. And we pay the price. Why? Because we behave like servants in Europe. This is the explanation. Why we have to pay the price, including the small nations and poor nations compared to the rich European countries like Bulgaria. So, first of all, we have to solve the political problem. And I think it's a matter of international law. Because is it not clear that some states violated the decisions of the Security Council? It's very serious. They created problems, human, political, social, billions of dollars expenses for the neighboring countries, and they don't pay anything. Is it not ridiculous the United States is saying they will take 10,000 refugees? Is it not brutal? So they created the problems in the Middle East, they will take 10,000, and we have to take 10 million. And we say that it's very nice, we will pay the bill. Really? The other players also, the United Kingdom. Mr. Blair and Mr. Colin Powell, they're supposed to appear before different institutions, including the tribunal. But what we are doing, now we have to pay billions of euros. And what they do, they leave the European Union, UK, having fun, not paying anything. And now it's a budget problem, and we have to pay. It's better to pay now, supporting countries like Greece, Bulgaria, Macedonia, at the border over there, because if you don't spend now a few hundred million euros, we have to spend billions of euros in the near future. I think it's very clear. Because we have to stop, if you say refugees, we have to be very precise here. If you take a look at the statistical data, below 10% of the migrants are from Syria. So the huge majority of people moving to Europe are economic migrants. It's clear there is no discussion here. Coming from Afghanistan, from Egypt, as I said, very small percentage from Syria. If you take a look at the demographic structure, most of them are young men between 35 years old. A low number of kids and women, and which is very interesting. I cannot prove this here, but we have information from the Bulgarian security services. These people are very well organized. I will leave the answer to you, who is organizing them and who is financing them with billions of dollars? Where they have the money from to pay to the traffickers? Because they have to cross Turkey, by the way, it's between 10 and 20,000 euros per person. Then they have to cross the Bulgarian border with Turkey. Then they have to pay again when they cross the border to Serbia and Romania. And they pay for every single kid or member of the family. And where is the money from? Is it so difficult to answer the question? There is another problem. Let's say we will find the money. So I think that the European Union must respond not just with finances to prevent the migrants coming to Europe, because we are talking not about few thousand. We are talking now about the possibility of millions of them crossing the border. So it's better to spend money, but also we need additional resources. Europe must act as a unity. Soldiers, specialists from different countries, helping the neighboring countries of Turkey. So it's not just a matter of money. It's a matter of political support, physical support, and so on. There is no time to discuss another question. You know, maybe some of you, I had to serve in the Bulgarian army 2 years. It was compulsory in Bulgaria. But I'm asking myself, let's say we will spend money to develop the walls with Turkey. But what they do? They have a special scissors, you know, they cut the prevention barriers, and they are trying to cross the border. What are we going to do? Are we going to shoot at them? There are some women and kids. How you will stop them physically? What are we going to do? And finally, the solution is peace in the Middle East and Northern Africa, a restoration in Middle East and Northern Africa. Instead of spending money in the Middle East or the neighboring country, it's better to make money there. But we need stability. And this is the main problem. Some countries, some of them are partners of Europe.
And to finish, Roman?
Yeah, yes, I'm going to finish. In theory, before the TV, they speak about the peaceful process. Behind the scenes, they are working in the opposite direction. And we pay the price, ladies and gentlemen. So the problem is how we behave. We behave like a servants again, or we will put on the table the real issues, saying, listen, guys, in the environmental tax policy, we have a principle, as you know. The polluter pays principle, is that right? So the troublemaking countries, they have to pay. They have to take the major burden on the European budget. Otherwise, we will stimulate the violation of the international law. And the story will never end.
Thank you. Very well.
Well, and now I need really to be brief because we are leaving to vote. First of all, I completely agree with Isabel's presentation of approach, so I will not repeat what she just said because she could define a progressive approach. Let me tell you that S&D Group has been extremely active about these issues. We have defined what we call a holistic approach to deal with the problem. But here today we are financial and economic experts, so let me draw the implications of these for our kind of discussion. I would say, first of all, this issue is of course becoming an absolutely central issue because this is fueling all xenophobic conservative movements, which are also nationalistic movements. Mm-hmm. So if you don't take care of these, we will have a fragmentation of the European Union, because they are using this issue as the main argument to claim that it's better to go back to national borders in any case. We saw the recent development in Germany, even in Germany. So this is a very serious threat against the European Union as such. Therefore, we need to be able to come up with real European solutions. Well, let me be brief. S&D position, S&D Group has identified three clear priorities. First is about human behavior when dealing with refugees. So this means this is about reception and integration. Second priority is about mastering our borders. And we do need to have a progressive concept of European border. This issue now is extremely relevant for Bulgaria, of course. We need to discuss what is our concept. Yes.
Of course.
Yeah.
It is. It is.
Sorry, members of Parliament, I will not permit dialogues here. Okay. So, Maria João.
But we do need to have a discussion among us about what should be a European border. We cannot neglect this issue, because otherwise citizens will move to the xenophobic party. So we need to understand this problem. For me, this is not a wall. This is an advanced infrastructure providing services, but I have no time to elaborate on this. Third priority is, of course, to go to the root of the problem, which is about stabilization, dealing with the conflicts, and having a proper development policy, which we don't have. Because you are right, most of these waves which are coming, they are also about not only refugees, but people in need. So we need to go to the root. Well, 2 days ago, we were in the State of the Union speech in Strasbourg, and we saw Juncker announcing an investment fund for Africa. Yeah. So let's see what is really the proposal. Because now I'm concluding with this. The financial solutions to tackle these are what can be made with our national budgets, because we should consider this an investment. Even building up a border is an investment. So we need to consider this an investment. And receiving refugees, integrating them, organizing circular movements with them, and everything else. So we need to have a proper treatment of this spending in the stability and growth part. First point. Second, we should see how the investment fund, EFSI, the Juncker plan, can be adapted to this, because from my viewpoint, we should set a connection between integrating refugees, fighting against ghettos in our cities, and renovating our cities. When we have this big plan about smart and green cities, they should also be inclusive cities without ghettos. So this is a big investment in Europe. Third point for investment is building up the European border. And the first one is about cooperation. So in all these, national budgets have a role to be played, but they are not enough, clearly. Therefore, we are confronted with updating the community budget to meet these new needs. And let me tell you that we are just starting now with the revision of the community budget for next year, the revision of the multi-annual financial framework until 2019. So we need to cope with these new priorities, but my point is that we have a big problem here, because we cannot sacrifice the other priorities to deal with this. So we need really to find new resources. That's why the discussion on resources is important. The one on tax evasion is very important. We are even considering the possibility of using these fines on competition policy. If member states don't want to have them back, well, they should at least be kept by the community budget and be used for progressive purposes. We are even considering this possibility.
Thank you. I had just Karine, but we have a problem because it's 5 to 12. So, Isabel would like to say. Karine, can you...
I want to be brief, but I'm sorry, dear colleagues, I just want to be brief. Yeah. We are not speaking about do we have to welcome refugees or not. It is not the discussion of the morning. I'm very sorry, Isabel and Anna, but that question was answered by Mrs. Merkel. And Mrs. Merkel said, yes, I will welcome refugees. So it's not the socialists that answer this question. It is Mrs. Merkel. Now we have this answer that has been given by the right-wing, European right-wing, and we are welcoming refugees. What is our position from a European point of view with this situation? That's the only point. And I think Maria is perfectly right. First, do we agree on building and financing a common extra-Europe border, which means that we stop explaining that there are some black holes in Europe, such as Calais. Calais is just a border of Europe. Bulgaria is just a border of Europe. Greece is just a border of Europe. So do we finance a common European border or not? I'm not sure that we agree on that, and it would be very interesting to know whether all our colleagues are ready to finance a true border of Europe with all the means. Second point, we know that we have a problem of common defense issue. There are only three countries in Europe that are, one is not anymore in Europe, by the way, after the Brexit, that are financing the war against Daesh in Syria. It is France, Italy, and UK. So, do we have a position on the way we finance the common defense of Europe in front of the real cause of refugees? That's a main question from a European budget point of view. A main question. We are speaking of 4 or 5% of GDP of defense expense. Without UK, I don't know how we are going to do. Second point. And third point, and I just stopped there. I think it's very important what Maya said. Do we speak of new financing solution, or do we use the financing solution that we have? If we speak of a new financing solution, we could go, and I am not ready for that for myself, but maybe our colleagues will be, to a refugee tax, which was the idea of Mr. Schäuble, a refugee tax. I do not agree with a refugee tax for myself. But anyway, I think that it's a very important question that we have to face between us without saying outside this room what we really think about that.
Thank you, Karine. Now I'm passing the chairmanship to Valérie. Before that, since some of you will go and I will not meet you, just a word of thank. And I think it was very, very interesting, this meeting, which is not finished yet, but for those who are leaving, Have a safe trip back home and hope to meet you in the next meeting. I think Valérie will introduce the topic of the next meeting, but for now I have to leave to the plenary. Isabel wanted to say some words, so I'll just pass to Isabel first and then Valérie takes the chairmanship. Thank you.
Only to present my excuses, but I need to go to to voting now. And to stress here some topics that I think it's are very important in this discussion. The combat to trafficking, of course, this is important, but we only can combat trafficking if we have the new concept of borders. And this is it's not a very consensual approach. I think we need advanced borders. We need to organize this movement, not when the movement arrive in Europe. We must go to the countries of the origin and try to have a process organizing this. And this is, in my understanding, the only way to combat trafficking. This, and to grant security in this movement. So we need that concept of progressive concept of borders. It's very important. And proper development. I took this note. Yes, we need one policy for cooperation for development. And this is a huge failure till now. And I am not seeing till now one approach to one solution for this. The fund that was talked yesterday, it can be everything or nothing. I'm very skeptical. I'm sorry, but I'm very, very skeptical. Looking to our history about the cooperation for development, I'm very skeptic. But I always hope for one solution, and I'm waiting for that. But this is, of course, something that we must discuss. And we must have a very strong role as progressive people discussing this theme. And I think Portugal can give a good help, as you know, by our history about cooperation and dealing with this concept of cooperation for development. The topic of human behavior with refugees, of course, it's one of the main topics that we must address. And the problem, of course, it's not budget. Budget is always very important, but the problem that we are facing, it's a problem of political will and a problem of leadership. This is the biggest problem of Europe, a problem of leadership and political will to deal with this problem. And the problems that are around of this crisis, that are problems of insecurity, and we are not facing real solutions. Thank you very much, and excuse me for go in this moment, but I must vote.
Okay. So thank you for this last word. I think that Stéphane, you have the floor as well.
Oui, donc moi je voulais, si tu veux bien de nouveau traduire comme hier, c'est gentil. Donc moi je confirme effectivement ce que j'ai dit hier au niveau des moyens budgétaires qui sont alloués pour ce qui concerne la sécurité et l'asile et l'immigration.
So I confirm what I said yesterday regarding the means, the financial and budgetary financial means on security and immigration.
Nous avons eu un accord avec la Commission pour exonérer ces crédits-là, et donc j'ai effectivement les différents courriers, donc je peux transmettre à ceux qui le désirent les courriers.
Got an agreement from the European Commission not to include in the computation of the public deficit some of the expenses related to immigration. And Stéphane added that he has all the letters here signed by Pierre Moscovici explaining how it works and which article in the Maastricht treaty is used to avoid to have these expenses in excluded from the computation of the public deficit. So I added, this is I think this is crucial for all of our countries.
Alors plus spécifiquement concernant la crise migratoire, ce que je voudrais dire, c'est qu'au point de départ, la réaction de l'Union européenne a été beaucoup trop axée sur le sécuritaire.
I would like to add that at the beginning, the reaction from the European Commission was mainly focused on expenses related to security.
Et on a vu donc à ce moment-là directement un retrait sur soi, et même au sein de certains pays où nous sommes au pouvoir, on a vu la réouverture de frontières et des réactions beaucoup trop sécuritaires. On a remis des frontières au sein de certains pays, même des pays où nous étions en majorité.
But it's not related to budget.
No.
Yes. We saw within the European Union that, of course, some frontier have been added as a reaction for security.
Il aurait fallu, dès le départ, lutter contre les causes de la migration, les causes de la migration sur place, et non pas avoir ce seul réflexe de fermeture de frontières.
We should have reacted from the beginning to fight against the reason why people are coming to Europe, instead of just putting some new frontiers.
Évidemment, luttant contre Daesh, ça fait aussi partie des causes de la migration, et nous participons aussi à la coalition en mettant à disposition nos avions F-16.
The reason explaining this migration is of course the fact that we are fighting against Daesh, and as in Belgium we put some airplanes at disposal, F-16, for the coalition.
Yes. Il fallait aussi utiliser beaucoup plus notre coopération développement dans les pays qui en avaient besoin, et je pense spécifiquement par exemple à l'Afrique, au Liban et dans le pourtour méditerranéen.
We should have used maybe more specifically our means for development and cooperation, especially in Africa, in Lebanon and in all Mediterranean countries.
Alors l'accord Union européenne-Turquie, nous avons été très critiques par rapport à ça, puisqu'on voit que l'Union européenne remet sa politique migratoire entre les mains d'un seul pays.
We are very critical against the agreement that has been signed between the European Union and Turkey, because the consequences of this agreement is that we put in the hand of Turkey all our migration policies.
Et nous devons encore être plus attentifs au regard de la situation politique en Turquie, et surtout au regard des sommes énormes qui ont été promises à la Turquie, puisque c'est 6 milliards qui ont été promises à la Turquie.
We should be very, very careful regarding this agreement, because especially regarding the evolution of the political situation in Turkey, and regarding the 6 billion euros we promised to Turkey as part of this agreement.
Donc à titre d'information pour la Belgique, pour l'instant, dans le cadre de cet accord, c'est près de 58 millions qui ont été versés.
Just as information, Belgium already paid to Turkey 58 million euros.
Et donc il est important aujourd'hui de contrôler aussi où va cet argent en Turquie.
So it's very crucial to control how this money is used by Turkey.
Et donc c'est une de nos préoccupations actuelles, Et la Grèce a d'ailleurs aussi demandé de voir s'il ne fallait pas réfléchir à un plan B, parce qu'eux aussi ont des besoins énormes.
And we should also to think about a new plan, because Greece has some needs regarding huge needs regarding immigration.
Voilà.
Thank you. Does someone else wants to? Yes. Two minutes.
I just would like to say that I agree that indeed we need to tackle the root causes, and that requires indeed a sensible development policy, which is not the one we have been doing. And I'm sorry to say, but the trust fund, if it announces at the top of the countries that are going to receive Ethiopia and Sudan, sorry, these are governments that are makers of refugees and migrants. They are repressing their people. In the case of Sudan, the head of the country is even indicted by the ICC. Then, Turkey. I fully agree with what our Belgian colleague has just said. And in the case of Turkey, more than the money, they want the visa liberalization, and they won't get it because they won't fulfill the conditions in terms of the rule of law. So at any moment we'll be blackmailed by Turkey. And Turkey can put everything in jeopardy and create a bigger trouble for all of us. Then borders. Yes, of course I agree that we need to defend the external borders. And yes, Calais is the part of the, will be part of the external border with the Brexit. But the question is, the wall, people will go and do it a little far away. I mean, I've been to Calais recently, and the money has been the source of the reason why people are there. They will pass one way or another. This has a lot to do. In the days we were supposed to have borders, national borders. More than 1 million Portuguese passed these national borders illegally to go to France, to go to Germany, and so on. People will come one way or another, cutting the border, whatever. The question is, the only way to properly, indeed, control our borders, apart from, indeed, the joint endeavour that will require money in policing, but it is not proof, is actually to open safe and legal ways. And this our governments have refused. And by the way, to fight Daesh, yes, I am for fighting Daesh. For a long time we should have fought Daesh. We should have even avoided contributing for Daesh in one way or another, which we did. But then, and we need money for that, for the CSDP operation that we didn't have but should have. It's not just French or whatever. It should be a CSDP operation. And we need money for that. And we need as well money for a sensible foreign policy that tackles the root causes of the conflicts. But as our colleague has said, in Syria, sorry to say, where is the European Union? I mean, now Frederick is begging the Americans and the Russians to tell her where we are. What they're doing, what they're cooking.
Just maybe to come back to one question that has been raised by Karine, Maria, etc. Last time when we met in Paris, we did not find any common position or common consensus regarding this topic. And especially on the side for the financing. We know that some of our German colleagues, not from SPD but from the right side, would propose to have a kind of a refugees tax. Personally, I think it's not a good idea. But is there any suggestion you would like to raise today regarding this question, knowing that, I don't know if you remember last time when we spoke about it, we did not get any data from the European Commission to see what would be the cost for all individual countries. 6 months later, we did not receive any answer, but I will call back to see if there is one. So this is the first point. The only institution having made some estimation of the cost is the IMF that has put that on the table, and of course there was a cost relatively high for Germany in terms of GDP, of percentage of GDP. So is there any suggestions today we could raise or put on the table regarding this financing, or is there not? I don't know. Maria.
Valérie, many thanks for raising this question, because we should try as well together to identify a possible solution, since the problem will be there for sure. Well, let's see what are the decisions of Bratislava today. I would say it's likely that Bratislava will produce something, one single issue on defense. I'm not entering into the detail, but I completely agree with Karin when she says that we do need to have a stronger European defense capacity. And it's not only for France or others to tackle the Daesh threat, because this is a threat for all of us. So I think this is the key issue. We have this. We have the recognition that we need to have a more effective development policy. And third, we have higher spending with the operations of receiving and integrating refugees. My proposal, so I'm coming back to S&D group discussions, is that we should not go to a refugee tax, because this is completely counterproductive in political terms. It's a killer for us. But there is something our group is calling for, is to say the following. And we are preparing a big political battle on this. Is to say, look to the situation of the European Union. We do need better European solutions. Otherwise, the European Union will collapse, will go back to national borders. So we need to take a serious decision on the community budget for the next period. And we have two solutions for this. The first one, which can be decided by governments in the current legal framework, is to raise the ceilings, their national contributions for the community budget. I spoke about this with several ministers of finance, and some of them are telling me this is feasible in political terms. But I'd like to have your opinion about this. Perhaps this is not easy, but this is feasible. Of course, it will be easier if these national contributions has the proper treatment when it comes to the Stability and Growth Pact commitments. This is the short term, and this is feasible on the short term. Then we have a second issue, which is the discussion on own resources. And we need to move with this discussion. But in any case, I think this is wrong for us to say that we will increase these financial resources to tackle the refugees crisis. No. We need to increase the resources to have a community budget able to deal with the different challenges we are coping with. I think this would be wrong to make a particular connection with refugees, because this will divide public opinion and will put many citizens against us. This is my advice. But in any case, it's up to you to see, because and there is a third proposal I'd like to make, is about national spending and treatment in the framework of the Stability and Growth Pact. Because as our Belgian colleague has referred, this should be considered for the flexibility and for the investment rule we are developing inside the Stability and Growth Pact. So if a member state has special spending to adapt cities to integrate refugees, or if a member state has some additional spending to build up this European border with appropriate staff trained and so on, this should be considered for the flexibility rule we have in the Stability and Growth Pact.
Rumen.
Short comment. I agree with Maria that it's a better idea to have a refugee tax. It's not going to be accepted by the parliaments. I also doubt that the increase of the contribution of every country will be accepted in this situation of trends of decentralization of Europe and problems of different countries. There will be difficulties with countries like Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary. For sure, it's difficult. I think that it's more rational, and I'll give you an example. It's more rational, it's easy to say, restructuring the spending machine of the European Union. For instance, very practical solution. It's not my idea. It was, you know, generated a long time ago. This is the public-private partnership. Some countries, what they do, they free budget money by letting the private business investing in public projects, allocating some money as a guarantee for these investments. So let's say, even if you have a 10% risk and we put aside, let's say, 10 billion or 100 billion euros, and the risk is up to 10 billion euros to be used as a guarantee to private investments, then we have 90 billion euros free to be reinvested in different projects, including investment in borders, investment in public activities, joint ventures in the Middle East, if there is a peace agreement, of course, in the future, but just for the coming few months, because the idea for a common army, it's a, you know, an old idea, and it's a must for Europe. Otherwise, we'll continue to be treated as a political mouse. But it will take time, Maria, you know very well. It will not happen tomorrow. There are political obstacles, national, international. The Americans will do everything they can to stop such kind of a process because for reasons all of us know very well. So it will take time, and we have no time. We have to act today and tomorrow because the wave of migrants are, you know, by the way, unfortunately, the process is just at the very beginning, and the danger is really great. So reallocation of money as a beginning, one of the possible instruments is this one. Leaving free money from some of the public projects, arranging more private capital, reallocating this money, it's not a big deal, by the way. Is it so difficult to reallocate 10 billion euros for the upcoming months' activities at the borders? I don't think that it's a complicated task, because otherwise we will have problems, especially if, instead of doing so, we have to take part in the blackmail game of Turkey. Because maybe some of you don't know, but the key objective of Turkey, dear friends, is they have 25 million Kurds. They want them to emigrate from Turkey to Europe. Is it a secret? Maybe not 25 million. Maybe 10 million Kurds are ready to move from Turkey to Europe. If we allow the Turks to have a free visa movement to the European Union, is it so difficult to be understood by the politicians in Europe? Are we so stupid? And for countries like Bulgaria, it's a disaster, because at the moment the population of Bulgaria is 7 million. You know? 7 million people. Imagine that 2 million Kurds out of 20 million decided to go through Bulgaria to Europe. It's a disaster. And this is the end of Europe. So it's better to reallocate few billion euros now than having different topics in the coming few months.
Maria and Timo.
It's just a remark on PPP, so private-public partnerships. Well, we now have a very large experience, diversified experience about this in Europe. But I will go straight to the point by saying the following. Yes, of course, we can use these when it comes better allocation of public spending at national level. But there are two limits on this. Is that we need to make sure that we make commitments with the private side which are then really sustainable for the public budget. And second point, these PPPs will not prevent for us to commit with the discipline of the Stability and Growth Pact. So these solutions are now considered when a member state is assessed in the compliance with the Stability and Growth Pact. So there is a limit for using these. at the European level, now, in a sense, we are also working with PPPs. The Juncker investment plan is based on PPPs, so it's using public investment to leverage much more private investment and managing the risk profile of each project. And this makes sense, but we also know there is a limit for this. And as you know, there is all this discussion about is the guarantee we have in the Juncker plan enough to leverage the volume of private investment we need to leverage, and there is not. So we need a much stronger guarantee. So that's to say that in a certain moment we come back to the issue of public spending and public investment. And we need to create the room of maneuver for this. And here this is even more important because the purpose is not only economic, it's geostrategic. It's for us to master our territory. This is a very important issue. So just to say, yes, okay, but there is a limit for PPP's use. And you should be prepared. The next community budget will be full of PPP arrangements, full. And this can weaken this new approach, which is called new financial instruments, so it's a new jargon in Brussels, can also be used to weaken the cohesion policy. So we need to be careful about this. Just a caution. But in any case, I agree this is in our toolbox with this caveat.
Timo.
Thank you. I do second Maria Joao on this PPP question. Might be that is an answer to a question posed by Paolo yesterday, that why is it that the most needy countries do not get much funding off the EFSI? That's precisely because if you insist of having private investors in the projects, so private investors are not that keen on investing in Greece, say. So that's what is creating this distortion and an internal question of whether these investments go where they are most needed. It's a structural problem. But I also very much second your point on that refugee migration costs should be shut out of the Stability Growth Pact criteria. We had this discussion on our committee a couple of times, actually two committees, where the typically hardline Finnish minister said that there should be no room of maneuver on these rules. And we tried to tell him that, are you certain you want to go to the electorate and say that because of the migrants, because of the refugees, we have a growing deficit which requires slashing the social budget? So you are in effect telling the electorate that the migrants are taking away your benefits. And that's certainly not something that you want to tell them. So work in Brussels, try to come up with a deal that these costs should not be counted as part of these Growth and Stability Pact criteria. I don't know where the thinking goes now in the Council level, so I'd be really glad to know whether a decision or a resolution is made on this this issue.
Karine. Just on what Timo has said, and as we have discussed with Stefan on the way Belgium has asked the European Commission to treat out of the growth pact its deficit, the figures given by Stefan just now, I'm sorry I'm speaking for him, but it's very impressive. Belgium has asked to withdraw from the calculation of its deficit 350 million euro, which compared to the 50 billion more or less budget, means it is 0.5% of the budget. It's huge. I mean, if really European Commission accepts to move to change the calculation of the national deficit by this amount for Belgium,
If I make a little projection for France, if Belgium asks for 350 million, we could certainly ask for 1 billion or something more or less, which is absolutely not on the screen right now in France. So for my part, it's a real new information that that Stefan has given us. It's exactly what we wanted to have, more or less, as Timo said. And I think it's something that we could communicate on in each of our group in Parliament, because we have some proofs and we have some figures, and it's very clear the Belgium example is really very impressive.
And of course, that kind of exemption would be an incentive to take on refugees or migrants in your country, and that would be up to a point that would be make it less controversial with the citizens as well. So I there's nothing but good things I could see coming out of that kind of resolution, and it'd be interesting to know what in concrete terms we could do forwarding this demand.
Well, sorry, I take the floor again. What I propose you is that we write, as we did in June, a letter to Pierre Moscovici with all of us, signature, so we will do it this weekend and send it to you. With the reference of the article which has been provided by Stefan, and to have maybe an idea of the amounts that could be excluded in our countries, and to write it very quickly at the beginning of next week, all of us, and asking that for to Pierre Moscovici, if everyone agrees, because it would be a major first step to say, okay, we are making efforts as country, but this is recognized by the European Commission. I don't know if everyone agrees, so we could draft this letter and send it to you in your mailbox. And as we did for the potential growth, where you were 40 to sign the letter, to send it to Pierre Moscovici. Maria.
Valérie, je suis complètement d'accord. I'm coming back to English. I completely agree with your proposal. I think this is a very good idea. I'm just also suggesting that we send a copy of this letter to a very good ally of us, which is the Italian minister, Pier Carlo Padoan, yes, because he is now the coordinator of our Minister of Finance. So I'm going to these meetings, and we can send to him, and then I can hand to him and force the discussion in the ministerial meetings we have in the socialist family, and to check the position of our Minister of Finance, including the Eurogroup president, Dijsselbloem. Yes.
Are there any other proposal or suggestion? So, Stefan, thank you so much for the information. I think you are the king of the meeting today. Maybe before we go to, because if I understood correctly, at one we have lunch, so you have your meeting, but before you leave, two seconds, we will have a look at the new website, but it's at two, but we need to decide where we are going to meet for the next time. I don't know if there is some volunteer to organize this inter-parliamentary conference. Timo.
Suspicious silence around the around the table, but I've told everyone that I'd love to invite you all next year. A year from now, when our Parliament building renovation works are over, to to celebrate the 100th anniversary of Finnish independence, but now it's just nothing to see there. But if someone else takes the baton this time, so we would have that covered next year.
Maybe as you know that we have, well, what I understand is that we are welcome in Finland, so in 1 year, next autumn, maybe for next spring, because our next meeting is next spring, we could propose to come back again to Paris. It would be in March, because we have the general election in April and June, of course. But for us, maybe if you all agree, beginning of March in Paris, beginning of March, I insist, would be possible. But frankly speaking, if you accept, of course it would be a pleasure for us, but it also would be a political coup, because we could ask you a little sustain during our campaign and a European message for our candidate next March. So we could also have a more political approach with this interparliamentary approach. If I suggest, but you can, of course, think it's a little too much asked to you.
Bulgaria is an option, of course. It's better to have different countries. But I have to talk to the chairman tomorrow, on Monday, so, and we'll reconfirm. So if you wish, Bulgaria is also an option. Why not? You know, it will be a pleasure to have you in Sofia. It's not so big deal, you know, to organize a meeting like this. It's serious, you know, responsibility. But from organizational point of view, it's okay. So if you agree on this, I will talk to the appropriate institutional authorities, and we'll let you know in a few days.
If I sum up, there are two options for March, which are Sofia, and you will send us an email, and Paris. And for the next meeting, we are going in Finland to make a big to celebrate the renovation of the new building. And okay, so this is done for that. So now you have your meeting for the others. I think this is free time, unless you would like to speak or to debate about the TIPP. I don't know. No, okay. So we are meeting here at 1, is that correct? 1 p.m. for the lunch? No? Here? Ah. For some of you who are interested, there is a guided visit just before lunch. But where are we meeting here? Where is the stand? Where is the? But what, no, but for the people who want to visit
here.
Okay.
It's right now.
It's right now at 1 p.m. here.
Yes.
For the lunch after, we go all together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Now it's the visit, and after is the lunch. But for people who are not going for the tour, where are they meeting after? Because we are free people, not... And for them, where are they going for the lunch after?